Hello, this is Monica Reeds. I'm Georgina Godwin. Today I'm speaking to Derek Owusu, who's just been announced as the winner of this year's Desmond Elliott Prize, the flagship award in the National Centre for Writing's portfolio of early career awards, the UK's most prestigious award for first-time novelists. He's a writer, a poet, and a podcaster from North London. He fell in love with reading at 23 while studying exercise science at university. Eager to learn more, he obsessively read the classics and even snuck into English literature lectures. That reminds me, his first solo work was the first book to be released on Stormzy's Murky imprint. It explores addiction, identity, belonging, and much more through the fragments of one young man's memory. Derek, welcome to Monica Reeds. Can you start by telling us a little bit about your background?
Originally, my background was basically sport. So I used to be like a personal trainer and tried to be an amateur bodybuilder. So literature reading didn't factor into my life at all until I went to university. And basically my exercise science lecturer, I think he was my research methods lecturer, basically said he thinks we should go to the library and pick up some books because we would have to read research papers and get into that kind of mode. A good way to do that would be to read some of the classics. So I went to the library, just picked up a book of short stories by D.H. Lawrence. And then I read the first story, which was St. Moir, and everything just changed for me. I was kind of just like, why wasn't I reading before? This is so enjoyable, like really just, yeah, it did something to me. It made me feel like, I don't want to say purpose was reading, but it did make me feel, it almost made me feel like I had a superpower, being able to read and absorb this information and have my imagination working and trying to figure out, what does this mean? What does that mean? What does this represent? What's the author trying to tell me? So yeah, I just started devouring books. I just started reading loads of classics without knowing they were classics. I didn't know they were classics. I just thought it was just regular books, to be honest with you. So I had no idea a lot of the authors were dead. I didn't know Oscar Wilde was dead. I didn't know Ian Forster was dead. Yeah, I went through them all and I just became like a real fanboy for the classics.
I love the idea of reading as a superpower. I think that's absolutely correct. It just catapults us everywhere in the world. I mean, the thing is that you didn't come from a literary background. You were raised in foster care in Suffolk, and then you moved back to live with your biological parents in a really urban environment. So it wasn't the easiest of upbringings.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. So when I was in Suffolk in foster care, a lot of young people have very traumatic experiences in foster care. I wouldn't say that it was traumatic, I guess, on the outside, or even on my interior at the time. It didn't feel like any kind of trauma. You know, I was in one place. A lot of people get moved around. I didn't. I was in one place for 7 years. My foster parents were quite old. You know, it was a white middle-class family. The village was very small. Everybody knew each other. So I really enjoyed it. I really liked it. I think for me, the traumatic experiences started when I moved back to London. And I wasn't told I was going to be moved back to London. My mom just picked me up one day and that was that. I didn't really get to say an official goodbye to my foster mom.
And this is something that gets reflected in your writing. Let's talk about then how you crossed over from being a reader into being a writer.
So, you know, there was a point in London where everybody wanted to be like a rapper or an MC. And I was one of them. So I just started like writing lyrics to instrumentals on my computer. But the problem I had was that I was trying to squeeze too much information into one line. So when it came to recording, I would go over the bar, basically, and it just wouldn't sound good at all. But I would always be writing. I think I had pages and pages and pages of lyrics. And they were always so complicated. My friend who I used to do this with, he used to always say to me, why are you writing such complicated things? And I'm like, I just thought to myself, I'm not. Isn't this just how people rap and things like that? So yeah, that my rap career didn't last very long. And then I was thinking about this the other day, actually. I was on Facebook once, and a girl who was in my class in secondary school, she basically posted a poem that she had written on her Facebook. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And we started talking. She's like, why don't you try and write one? So I thought, okay. So I just wrote one on the spot. And she was like, that's all right. It's actually not that bad. So I just started writing like poems in my spare time that no one was ever going to see them. I was just doing them because I enjoyed the writing process. I think when I decided that I wanted to write something long form that I might maybe send to like an online publication or something, was when I was in uni, and a friend of mine had started like an online publication, and I was reading a lot, and I just said to her, can I write some book reviews? Will you post them? And she was like, if they're any good, then yeah, sure. I did that. They were probably terrible, but she posted them. And then I just started writing more and more. I wrote more poems. I tried to get one of the lecturers at the University of Bolton to read my poems and critique them, give me some tips, which she begrudgingly did. She emailed me back and said, I don't normally critique people's poetry who's not on my course, but I'll do three for you. She critiqued them, basically said that they're terrible, which was fine. Because at that time I was trying to write sonnets. I remember sitting in my room, I think for a couple of hours, really just trying to get iambic pentameter stuck in my head so that if I was writing a sonnet, I wouldn't have to think too hard about specific words, basically. I felt like the words would just come to me and they would be the right words for the rhyming scheme. But I just found it so, it wasn't enjoyable for me. It wasn't enjoyable for me at all. It wasn't the kind of craft that I wanted, to play with. If for me, it felt restrictive. You know, and I know, of course, this is about the poetics and things like that, but yeah, that just didn't really, you know, I tried to write something in, is it called dactylic hexameter? Mm. I can't remember what it's called, but basically the Odyssey is written in that style, and I tried to do that, so I thought that'd be easier. Definitely not easier. It was a lot harder, actually.
But eventually you come to this form of a novel in verse. Tell us how that came about.
Yeah, so it's interesting. When I was in uni again, I started just walking around watching people and then just going home and writing down little sketches, like someone who draws, just draws someone they're looking at on the train or something. I started writing, describing people that I was seeing in these kind of little short sketches. I thought to myself, I really like doing this. So I just carried on doing that in my spare time. And then, I guess, so after I had like a mental breakdown and I was in something called a recovery house, I started writing, I guess, kind of sketches about someone going through a mental collapse. What would that look like? And then I was writing things that were just random. And then I started writing something that had a narrative structure. I knew what I wanted to happen after that, and after that, and after that, and after that. And eventually it became That Reminds Me.
It's been published by Stormzy's imprint, Murky. First of all, tell us a little bit about that, because Stormzy is not a traditional publisher. This is the very first book published on his imprint.
Yeah, so it's not the first book, it's the first novel. The first book was a non-fiction book called Taking Up Space. This was the first novel that they published. That came about, so I worked for Penguin Random House, and I was sitting in the office of Tom Avery, who at the time was the editor for Heinemann and Murky Books as well. And we were just talking, just chatting, you know, we had a lot in common. And he had read my essay in a book called Safe. And he was just kind of like, you know, I like your writing style, blah, blah, blah. And I told him about a podcast I was going to do with my little brother. And he kind of, his eyes just lit up and said, this would be a great book. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, this would be an amazing book. Have you ever thought about not doing the podcast or doing a book and a podcast together? So we spoke about that for a bit. Then he got me in touch with Stormzy's manager, Aquia. I sent her some samples of my writing so that she could get a taste of my writing style. And when I sat down with her, she was like, you know what? I really like the verses that you sent me. We want to publish more fiction and poetry because we don't want to just be publishing nonfiction. We've got a lot of nonfiction books at the moment. So I said, well, you know, Tom wants the nonfiction book and you want this. So I don't really know what to do. And she said, just leave it to me. And then they came back and they offered me a 2-book deal. The first one being That Reminds Me, the second one being a book called Teaching My Brother to Read.
Teaching My Brother to Read is a fascinating concept, and I want to come back to that. But just on Murky, Stormzy's imprint, it clearly is doing a huge amount to diversify the publishing scene. Do you think that that's something that will stay beyond this moment? Do you think that the whole momentum behind Black Lives Matter and the whole zeitgeist is more than just a flash in the pan?
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. I've spoken to some older writers who have seen these kind of moments come and go, but they all say that this time it feels a little bit different. So potentially, yeah, it could last. It could last. I mean, I'm quite cynical. So there are times where I think this is just going to happen and then people are going to forget about it and move on to the next fad, I guess. But yeah, I really hope not. I mean, I do believe that Mercury Books will be around for quite a while. They have some great books coming out as well over the next couple of years. And Stormzy is very supportive of the creative industries, you know, education and things like that. So, and I don't see Stormzy going away anytime soon. So yeah, hopefully it will continue.
On to your brother. It's costing you a fortune to make him into a reader.
Yeah, you know, because he's like me, like how I was actually. And he just has no interest in reading. And I always find that strange. Even though I've been there, I still find it strange when I think about it. Because when I first got into it, I remember coming home from uni and I gave him To Kill a Mockingbird. And I said, just read this book. I think you'll really like it. Then he went up to his room. I came in like an hour later, and he was sitting on the bed and he was like crying, like holding back tears. And I was just like, Joel, what's happened? Like, the book moved you so much. And he was like, no, why are you making me read? Why are you making me do this? And I was like, wow, okay, this isn't the way to go about it if I want to get him to read. So eventually I kind of just said to him, look, we'll do this podcast about books. I will pay you £50 per book, no book longer than 300 pages. And then we can sit and we'll discuss the book. You tell me how it relates to your life. I'll tell you the generally accepted interpretation of the book, and we can meet somewhere in the middle. And he said, fine. But fortunately, he found a part-time job. So me offering £50 per book wasn't enough. So I might have to up it to 100 now.
but it is, as you say, going to make a book.
Yeah, exactly that as well. So he was excited as well when I said, you know, we're going to turn this into a book. He was like, and then I said, Stormzy's behind it. Then he was like, oh my God, yes, this is amazing. Do you know what I mean?
I want to talk a little bit about the book that you edited and that you contributed to, that you referred to. That's called Safe, on Black British Men Reclaiming Space. Tell me a little bit about the themes that run through that book.
Yeah, so 2020 Black British Male Writers. Themes cover, I guess, the meaning of our names. I wrote an essay in there about foster care. We've got an essay in there from Corte Newland about his experiences being sexualized by white women in his workplace. We've got essays about what it's like in Catholic schools for young black boys, what it's like just literally walking down the street. Alex Wheatle writes a brilliant essay about what it was like for him during and after the Brixton riots. He speaks about the sus law and things like that, where police could just stop you if they suspected that you were doing anything. And of course, with unconscious biases and racist structures around you, you know, black men are going to be stopped way more than any other person. So he speaks about that. Yeah, we've got Musa Okwongo writes an amazing essay about his blossoming bisexuality and what it was like for him coming from, you know, a country like Uganda and then having to deal with this kind of internal conflict. So it covers, you know, loads of different themes, ideas, different, everyone's got a different writing style. So I feel like it came together really well.
Talking about coming together and, of course, falling apart, your novel does talk very much about pieces that slowly break apart. Kay, who's sent into care before a year old, is a man of many pieces that do kind of disintegrate. And as you say, you wrote this whilst in recovering in a mental health facility. And I just wonder how much your experience of mental health issues helped you, or indeed hindered you, within your writing.
I think it helped me in a sense that I was able to write about certain things from a closer perspective. You know, I don't really write much about what it's like to be in a recovery house in there, because I felt like I really needed to distance Kay from myself. I mean, already now, a lot of people think that this is a memoir, like that all of the things I wrote about happened to me, but that's just not the case. But it definitely informed me. I think with a diagnosis like borderline personality disorder, you're very emotional. So some people call it emotional instability. You're very sensitive to little things. And I feel like that allows me to look at, I guess, people's behavior, gestures, all those kind of things, and pick up on them. And I just usually make wrong connections there. But if I know what I'm trying to convey, I can connect it and the reader will get what it is I'm trying to do. So I feel like it helped in that sense. Definitely, definitely. I think it hindered me in the sense that when I write, I try to imagine that what I'm writing about is happening to me or has actually happened to me, and I'm remembering how it felt. So I could write maybe like 500 words and I would have to stop because I'm emotionally exhausted. And I would, sometimes I would just write a verse and just go to sleep because it was so taxing for me.
At the end of the book, you provide resources with links to help people suffering from mental health issues. Was that a motivating factor, wanting to help?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a big motivating factor because I really wanted people to think about mental health issues outside of things like depression and anxiety. Of course, those are very important, but I do feel like, especially in mainstream media, we tend to want to destigmatize mental health issues. But those are the two that get brought up the most. So I really wanted to talk about things outside of that, and especially as it relates to Black men as well, because if somebody thought about a Black man having borderline personality disorder, I think it would confuse them. One, because it's always misdiagnosed, but also because they see us as these kind of strong men who can deal with anything. Do you know what I mean? They don't really think about us as being vulnerable, as being human. And I wanted to really get that across in the book. And I also wanted people to face the ugly side of some mental health issues. Because I understand they can be scary, but at the end of the day, I feel like if we don't understand them, then we can't really help the person who's suffering properly. Do you see what I'm saying? So for example, I have some self-harm scars on my arms, but when people have seen them, they've asked me, are they tribal marks? Because they can't really conceptualize the idea of a Black man, a man, sitting down and self-harming. And I think that's a very big problem. So yes, I really wanted to tackle that in my writing, because I understand it's uncomfortable to think about somebody inflicting pain on themselves. As humans, we find that deeply, deeply uncomfortable. But as I said, we just need to face up to that and get around that so then we can start helping people.
That Reminds Me by Derek Owusu is the winner of the Desmond Elliott Prize. It's published by Merkey. The prize is being run by the National Centre for Writing as the flagship in its early career awards portfolio. It's a new year-round platform of support and mentorship alongside financial assistance for exceptional early career writers. The awards are part of a larger package of activity helping to generate free digital resources for anyone, anywhere, wanting to get started in or develop their career. Creative writing, and those resources can all be found on the NCW website. You've been listening to Monocle Reads. Thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer Court. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.